and welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Laurel House, we have Beth Sturman, its executive director, and Stacy Dougherty, the deputy director. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Beth, you've been on this show off and on now for almost 20 years. And
I was very young when we started, Laura.
So was I.
So were you, yes.
So was we both I. We're both still young.
We are.
But let's talk about this conversation, because unfortunately it seems kind of old. We're talking about domestic violence today. And has the dialogue changed much over the last 20 years?
Laura, I wish I could tell you that, you know, our vision at Laurel House, our tagline is working to end domestic violence. I would love to see that happen. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime in the near future. The problem is still as prevalent as it ever was. The one thing that we do see a change in that I think is encouraging is that more people are reaching out for help. I think that over the years, and certainly you've been an important part of that, is you've helped us to raise awareness. And, you know, nationally, there's been a lot of work to raise awareness and break the silence so that people don't feel so isolated with it. So I do see one encouraging trend is that more people are reaching out for help. So we hope they keep doing that.
But yet we have had an exceptionally violent few months. And that is there some reason why these last few months we've seen the headlines, women dying, usually right after the breakup or right at the moment of leaving. But we're seeing women dying in, I think, unprecedented numbers.
It does seem to be unprecedented. Certainly in our region, it's certainly been more prevalent over the last several months than previous years, so at least the last few years. And it's hard to know what the reasons might be. I think, you know, we've seen nationally an emergence of an increase in mental health problems, not just with domestic violence, but with teens, with adults, with kids, as we emerge out of the pandemic. And maybe that's a contributing factor. It's really hard to know what the contributing factors are. What we'd really love to focus on is how people can take the steps to protect themselves, especially, as you said, Laura, during a breakup or immediately after a breakup, when we know is the most physically dangerous time.
Yeah, that's one of the sad truths about domestic violence is that the most dangerous time for victims is up to a year after they've left the relationship. So even though they're not with that abusive partner, their danger certainly increases when they're trying to leave. So that's the really important time for when victims are planning to leave a domestic violence situation or thinking about leaving, to talk to an advocate and get somebody to help them safety plan around leaving safely.
Well, that's something we're going to be discussing, that safety plan. But just before we began taping today, Beth, you mentioned that it might not have been a physically abusive relationship
Correct.
Before the separation,
Correct.
But something just triggers and you can't be positive that any breakup is going to be a safe one.
Right. I think that's one of the hard things that we see as we work with folks who are in troubled relationships is that it's very hard for them to envision that it's really that dangerous, that it's physically dangerous, especially if there isn't a documented history of physical abuse prior. And maybe there was a push or a shove, but nothing that the person would consider to be domestic violence. And then they leave. And as the abuser realizes that they've lost control of the situation, that's when it really can escalate and get really, really dangerous. And what we've seen an increase in, too, is the homicide suicides, which to me, a sign that there's some mental health going on there on the part of the abuser. And that's a really hard one to address. That certainly seems to have been occurring more often over the last several months than we've seen in prior years.
And one of the things to know about domestic violence is that it's based on power and control. So when a victim is trying to leave, that abuser is losing that power and that control over their victim. And they're going to try to regain that in any way they can. So oftentimes it comes back into those, if I can't have you, no one can kind of mm-hmm. conversations. So they'll try to regain that power. And oftentimes it does turn into pretty violent ways to do that.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Laurel House and your
sure.
services first? And then let's get into more in depth how relationships can either be saved or ended well for everyone.
Sure. Thank you. Laurel House is a comprehensive domestic violence agency. We're based in Montgomery County. We serve the entire county. We have a variety, everything from prevention education, starting as young as elementary school, on up through middle school, high school, and colleges. We do a lot of healthy relationships training. And then we do a lot of direct service. So we have an emergency response team. We have legal support. We have a staff attorney who can help with protection from abuse orders. We have a safe haven shelter for abused people and their kids. We used to only be able to serve women, but in our new building, we're able to serve male victims as well as female victims and their children. And then we have some transitional housing for after people are done with shelter. There's a limit. The housing crisis in Montgomery County has made it more difficult for folks to find a safe place to go, but we have advocates that help them through that process. So it's very comprehensive. We are one of a large number of domestic violence agencies throughout the Commonwealth. Every county either has an agency within their county or in an adjoining county that provides services to them. And all of us are umbrellaed by the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence. So although Laurel House directly serves Montgomery County, we work very closely with the surrounding counties. And we do, for safety reasons, oftentimes people will come to us from surrounding counties or even other states for shelter services. And then the other community-based service that we have is counseling. We have five different counseling locations throughout Montgomery County. So sometimes if someone isn't sure about staying or leaving a relationship, or maybe they've recently left and they need some help to work through the trauma of the situation they've just left, or maybe they still need to be in contact with the person because of children in common, our counseling is free and confidential, and our counselors can help someone sort all that out and work through the trauma. So that's what we do, and many other organizations in surrounding counties provide very similar services. So there's help available for folks no matter what county you start out from.
And if someone does reach out to you, will you refer, if someone in Delaware, if someone in New Jersey, Maryland,
yes,
you will refer?
We do. We actually just got a outreach over the weekend from Maryland, and we were able to give them their local number. So that happens a lot. People aren't sure where to call. Now, as I said, people may come to shelter from other states even, and certainly from throughout the Commonwealth, just because it may not be safe for them to stay in their home area. But if there are other services that they need or they're not looking to leave their immediate area, we certainly can help them with numbers to get them connected to the most, you know, the closest resources to where they live.
You alluded to mental health, and that possibly in the spike of extreme violence that we've been seeing lately. Does that play into it in other times or in other ways? You talk about you have prevention courses for teens and youth. Now, is that prevention in recognizing, in treatment? How do you prevent this?
Thanks for it. It's a tricky question.
Because I threw that out with it. It's a large one. I'm letting you wrestle that. I gave you so many options there.
You did. You know? Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a tricky one because we know, as Stacy said, that domestic violence in its purest form is based in the idea of power and control. And the one person has power or perceived power over the other person. And that might be financial. It might be emotional abuse. It could be take the form in all different kinds of ways that could present itself. And certainly the last most dangerous part is the physical violence. But there is sometimes for some people in difficult relationships, abusive relationships, a mental health component as well. And so our prevention work really is about red flags. What's a healthy relationship? How can you help a friend if you're concerned about them? And warning signs, maybe initially it looks great to a teenager. Oh my gosh, he or she just wants to spend all the time with me. They don't want me to see my friends because they just want to be with me all the time. Well, that's actually a warning sign, even though it might feel good and look good to a 15-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid, young person. Those are actually warning signs that something's not right, that it's not a balanced kind of relationship. So it's hard to sort through the mental health piece. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it's just plain old power and control.
And one of the things, too, about prevention is that when we go out and talk to the students in high schools and middle schools and colleges, is, one, it's helping them to identify, am I in an abusive relationship? Is this healthy or not healthy? But also on the flip side of that, we've had a lot of students come up to us and reach out to us on our text line or our other programs and say, you know, I actually might be the abuser. I might be the one practicing unhealthy tactics in my relationship. So we're helping them to see that what they're doing, what their behaviors are, maybe not healthy, because they don't often have, you know, examples in on social media or examples in, you know, TVs and pop culture to kind of rely back on for a healthy relationship. So they don't always know that their own behavior might be contributing to that abuse.
I am so glad that you said that, because my next question was going to be, it's almost getting towards blame the victim. Mm-hmm. It's prevent getting into an abusive relationship, not stopping this potential abuser for the next person who comes along and falls into that trap of control, pushing back and forth.
Yeah, when we go out and talk to some of the middle schools, and it's always interesting, some middle schoolers are into dating, sometimes they're not. But we just talk to them about what it means to be a good friend, because oftentimes what it means to be a good friend in a relationship is also what it means to be a good partner to somebody in an intimate relationship. So building on that foundation for them is, how do you treat people with respect? How do you communicate? How do you express, your own body autonomy when you're working, when you're in a relationship, that sort of thing. So we start really foundationally with younger students and kind of help them realize that the things that they practice with their friends are also going to work for them in their relationships.
Is this a problem that is intergenerational? Abuser becomes a parent of an abuser.
I mean, there are certainly statistics out there that say it's a cycle, right? And if you don't break the cycle, it will continue. Unfortunately, children who are raised in abusive relationships can certainly, you know, either become victims themselves or practice some of those abusive techniques as abusers. And some might not do anything. Some might not have any issues in their relationships. It certainly depends. But there is a possibility for that abuse cycle to continue and continue throughout the generations.
I've never asked this. Does misogyny play into this?
Sure. Of course it does. Yes, and we also know that men can be victims too. And I think when you ask earlier about what's changed over the last, 20 years, is more a recognition, not just on the part of domestic violence agencies, but on the part of law enforcement and the courts, court system, medical professionals, that yes, men can be victims too. They can be victims in same-sex relationships, but they can also be victims where their significant other is a female. And we have seen an increase in referrals from law enforcement for male victims, which I think is great, because it was always happening. Now people are just reaching out more for help. Just real quick, to go back to the question about the cycle, and as Stacy said, it unfortunately, statistically, kids that don't have, the healthy relationship role models at home often grow up to either become victims or abusers or both. But the other thing that we've seen, and I've heard it from different generations of victims, is that sometimes they were raised in such a way that they were a little naive, maybe, about what could happen in a relationship. They had no idea that domestic abuse was even possible, because they were raised in a very loving home and they saw their parents treat each other with respect. So when they get into a problematic relationship, they keep thinking, I must be doing something wrong, because otherwise, why would this person be treating me this way? And then they become a victim, always seeing the potential and the good side of the person that they care about, and not recognizing, fully recognizing the danger that's involved.
When we talk about men as victims, or we talk about somebody who came from a loving home, it does remind us that domestic abuse is not always physical. And there's also financial abuse and emotional abuse. And do you want to talk a little bit about, how do we know when something is wrong? Obviously, when it gets physical, that's a red flag. But sometimes it's more subtle, and it takes a long time, and it's boiling a frog. You don't notice until it's too late.
Yeah, it's interesting to me when you talk to a lot of the survivors of domestic violence. A lot of them will say that it's oftentimes the emotional and the mental abuse that leaves the the most long-lasting mark for them. And you don't notice it right away. We've worked with survivors who have doctorates, tons of education, have held high-power jobs. But because of that, the gaslighting and the emotional abuse, they're very worn down and told that they're not worthy or, you know, all kinds of things. And it takes them a long time to realize that. But, you know, your partner is supposed to be someone who builds you up and provides you a safe environment, someplace to thrive and be who you want to be. So someone tearing you down and if you feel less than or, you know, feel as though you're not good enough in your relationship, that's definitely a red flag, something to consider that this might not be healthy for you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And financial abuse is another thing that we see, which honestly is one of the hardest barriers for a lot of our survivors to overcome, especially with the housing crisis the way it is right now, is that, you know, the fear of potentially being homeless with your children would absolutely overpower a victim wanting to ever leave their home. So many folks would choose to stay in their abusive relationship than possibly wind up homeless with their children. So that fear of leaving when you don't have the financial means to be able to do that is really overwhelming for many of them.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Laurel House, we have Beth Sturman, that's Executive Director, and Stacey Dougherty, she is the Deputy Director. Laurel House can be found at laurel-house.org, and you can reach them in an emergency. Just text HOPE to 85511, 85511. And you can also text them, especially in an emergency, or if you don't want the, you know, if you want to start a dialogue, you can text to them as well. Text HOPE to 85511. And wherever you are hearing this, wherever you may be, there is a national hotline, and it is 1-800-799-7233. And they have a very easy text number to remember, 88788. 88788. Now, let's talk about the leaving. They might not go the first time. They might think about it, but then think again, I don't want my children to be without the other parent, or I don't have a place to go. I don't have money. But what if I do want to go and I know I have to start planning for it? What are the steps somebody should take?
So another statistic for domestic violence victims that isn't always great, but it's certainly the truth, is that victims will leave their relationship an average of 7 times before they actually leave for good. Because again, it can be scary to leave your home, to pull your kids out of school, to lose, you know, the life that you built in a relationship. But the important thing is, when you do decide to leave, is to reach out to a domestic violence agency like Laurel House. Reach out and talk to an advocate, because we can really help you develop a safety plan as to how you can leave safely. Because again, leaving is the most dangerous time for survivors getting out of their relationship. So it's important to talk to somebody about what documents do you need to gather. You know, what should you do with the kids? How do you plan on leaving with the kids? You know, where should you stay? What number should you have? That sort of thing. So thinking about all of those can feel overwhelming, but it's helpful when you have someone like an advocate to help you navigate what those steps should be.
It's terrible, but it can take a while to prep to leave, to gather up some cash, to get some clothing together, or think about what do I need to walk out with, and then wait for that moment to do it.
Yeah, it's also interesting to me. Many survivors will actually start planning to leave almost unconsciously. They don't know that they're doing it. So they'll start squirreling money away. Maybe they'll create an email address for an email that their abuser has no access to. Maybe they reach out to an advocate just to kind of get information about what services are there. So it starts happening as a process. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So it's something that we have to take our time to make sure that we're doing correctly and safely. But yeah, many survivors will just start on their own sort of planning things and making, setting plans for leaving, and they might not even realize that they're doing it.
I think the one thing, and Stacey covered pretty much everything that we would go through in safety planning, although as she said, it's really good to do that with an advocate because everybody's situation is a little bit different. But the other thing that we've seen, and you know, Laura, when you ask what's changed in 20 years, the ability for people to track people through their phones, through computers, through GPS.
Tags.
All of that. So we really, in safety planning, also really try to help folks understand how easily somebody could find them if they aren't careful with cybersecurity. And we do provide phones for folks who are ready to go or have left and need a phone that the other person can't track. So that's a whole new level of danger, potential danger, where you can track somebody pretty much anywhere in the world, but certainly anywhere within the state of Pennsylvania or the surrounding area. So we really try to help people through that process as well.
So get a guide.
Definitely get a guide. And the other thing that we often suggest to people is if you have a trusted friend who, as different incidents are happening, you can have that friend write things down for you and keep those that documentation safe so that later when you go for a protection order, if you decide to do that, some people just choose to do that and some people don't. Or if there's a custody dispute or you feel like you don't, you would prefer for your children to only have supervised visitation with the abuser. If all that information is documented, it may, keyword may, hold up for you in court and help with help you have the outcome that you're looking for in a legal situation. It's also a good reminder because it's so easy for people when they're in an abusive relationship to go through something really awful and then within a week or two think, well, you know, maybe it wasn't that. But they forget about how horrible it was. But if the friend has written everything down, well, 2 weeks ago you told me, you know, he or she threw you against a wall and threatened to hurt the dog and threatened to never let you see your kids again. Oh, yeah, that's right. That happened because people when people are traumatized and abused, they kind of go into a foggy state of not necessarily remembering or fully comprehending everything that's happening to them in the moment. It's like a survival technique.
And as Beth said, you know, each safety plan is very individualized for each survivor. And we don't just safety plan for when you're leaving the relationship. We safety plan for, okay, now you've left. What happens when you go to work? Now you've left. What happens when you go to the courthouse? Now you've left. What happens when you go to your parents' house for Christmas? You know, we have to safety plan for all of these sort of things because you never know if that abuser knows where you work, knows where you, you know, are going for the holidays, knows that you're going to be at custody court at this date. What do we do to make sure that each and every step of the way this survivor is safe?
You mentioned electronic devices and social media. And so now we're going to completely flip things around because February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. And you can't talk about any youth or, well, actually anybody at this point, though, that social media is not a constant. And has that played into your work?
Oh, yeah. technology, we love technology, obviously, for a bunch of different reasons, but it is also making our lives a lot more difficult when it comes to trying to safety plan with folks because technology is always changing. So you can track people through all kinds of apps, especially when you're talking about teens. Texting is a huge way of maintaining power and control and harassing victims through texting. Snapchat as well. You know, people turn on their geolocations on Snapchat, post pictures on social media, just where their whole lives are available. So a lot of times in abusive relationships, especially in teens, social media is used as a way to, one, maintain that control, but also to also sometimes further victimize victims by posting things online, sending things to friends and family members that many victims don't want out there to the public.
What do you teach in or what do you highlight during Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month?
There's a great website. We often, in addition to working with teens and helping raise awareness with teens, we often get outreach from parents or aunts, uncles, grandparents who are worried about their young ones or, you know, teens or young adults. And there's a great website, loveisrespect.org, that has a lot of great information for teens and young people, but also great information for people who care about them and are concerned about them. There's a teen hotline. There's a teen text line, 22522. Text LOVE IS to 22522. And that's all year round, not just in February, but February is National Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. So a lot of schools now, especially middle and high schools, do some great work with helping raise awareness about teen dating abuse and teen dating concerns. And there's orange is the color for Teen Dating Violence Month. There's a Wear Orange Day to show solidarity and to really just help raise awareness. And that this year, that'll be February 12th, 2023. Hard to believe we're already in 2023, but it is. But we are, and it's February 12th. So it's timed a little bit before Valentine's Day. And a lot of times now, the schools that we work with will do Wear Orange campaigns. Certainly, we do it as a staff, but we have a lot of the kids doing it now, too. And then we have a poster at an art show. It used to be a poster contest. Now it's an art show to help raise awareness about healthy relationships and ways for teens to express, you know, what they've learned about teen dating violence and about healthy relationships. And that'll be in March, right after Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month.
You just mentioned the art competition. You have events throughout the year. Obviously, you have these programs that are available to schools. Do they just reach out to you?
They reach out to us or we reach out to them. There are 22 school districts in Montgomery County. It's a big county. We have two different educators that work with our schools and colleges. And we do some outreach to them. They do some outreach to us. And some we've done for so many years, we just know they're going to want us in October, which is National Dating or Domestic Violence Awareness Month, or in February, which is Teen Dating Violence Month. Awareness Month. So some were just on the roster every year, and some we do new outreach. It really depends if the staff is the same, but it's been we've really enjoyed. It's a great program. Stacy oversees the manager of that program, and I think it's really grown in the time that I've been at Laurel House, and it's really fun to watch how much more willing school districts are now to have us come in. At first, they were a little resistant to the idea that maybe there were problems with the teenagers' involvement with each other. But now I think most districts really welcome our service and our help with it.
How do we get involved with you? Obviously, if we are looking for help, we're going to reach out to you. If we know someone, we can reach out to you to ask, what do I do? If I'm a parent, you have this, there's a website, and we'll give that in a moment. But throughout the rest of the year, how do we help you and support you? Because I'm giving you the two-minute warning.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So we have our main number on our website, which is 610-277-1860. And if somebody wants to volunteer or help with some wish list donations or get involved in some other way, they can call that number. Or there's info@laurel-house.org is the email address to get connected. I always just encourage people, make the phone call, and then the folks who answer the call will help you get connected to whatever department is going to be a good match for you. We always need volunteers. We always need donations from our wish list. We were very fortunate this holiday season. And as we were looking around this morning at how really, really blessed we've been with the donations, we know that by March or April, we're going to be going, where are all those piles of wonderful things that we've already, you know, been able to give out to our clients? So always need that kind of help.
That is true. Clothing, toiletries,
house.
Mm-hmm. All of that. Marion's Attic?
So we have two thrift shops. Marion's Attic is in King of Prussia, and Laurel's Loft is in Lansdale. Another great place to donate gently used items, household items and clothing, and also a great place to shop. Mm-hmm. And a great place for people who might want a little more information about domestic abuse but don't want to call the hotline or don't want to come into the building. It's just a nice, safe way for folks to pick up information as a starting point. And then you ask about, I know I have my two-minute warning, you ask about people who are concerned about their loved ones. Our counselors are really good at working with family members to help them figure out how best to support a loved one that they're worried about.
Stacy?
Well, Beth covered most of it, but I was also going to say, if you'd like to make just a financial donation as a nonprofit, that's always appreciated to help us keep all of our programs going. And you can do that on our website or certainly call us to get more information on how to do that.
And that's all at laurel-house.org. You can call them 610-277-1860. That's laurel-house.org. Don't be afraid to contact them. They will make a referral if you are not in their immediate service area. But if you are in a crisis, if you do want information, or if you just want to talk to somebody, there is a national number as well. It's 800-799-7233 or text 88788. All this information you can find online. And that's the wonderful thing about that those electronic devices that we were just ranting on. Right. But yes, they do help in a crisis as well. And so here's where I say thank you very much to Beth Sturman, Executive Director, and Stacey Dougherty, Deputy Director for Laurel House. Again, find them at laurel-house.org. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, Laura.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.